I don't even have like a little middle name. What a loser.
No, I don't have a middle name. What's a middle name?
I don't know. I don't know anymore. Whatever. Okay, well,
I'm Harland Grant.
And I'm Ryan McKenna without a middle name.
This is the Dawdler's Philosophy Podcast. Shorts!
That's right. Oh.
Remember okay. when we used to do that? Okay. The Dawdler's Philosophy is an amateur production of two dudes in a basement with no association, affiliation, cooperation, or combination with any other entities, primate or otherwise. The views expressed may or may not have merit, and the listeners are encouraged to argue amongst themselves. If you wish to express appreciation for the endeavors undertaken, please visit patreon.com/dawdlersphilosophy to support the show. Send an email to dawdlersphilosophy@gmail.com or rate and review on Apple Podcasts. For updates and downtakes, follow on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or subscribe on your favorite podcast application. And what are we going to talk about tonight?
Do you have
a take or something or a question?
Oh, Jesus. No, I have a topic that comes to us from a friend of the podcast, J.S. Fisher. And you had said something about, you replied to him in a way. And you said, hey, what do you want us to do about something? I don't even remember the context of the tweeting going on. But then he was like, oh, I got to think about it. And then he came back and was like, what about the American dream? Dream.
The American dream?
And so we're going to do a little short on the American dream. Because
perfect.
It's become an American nightmare. Lately. Or is it always a nightmare and then every once in a while it becomes a little dream and you're like, and then, back to nightmare. Anyway. And so I decided I didn't want to there are obviously lots and lots of threads one could take this in, and put together and do all this kind of stuff and make it a big ass episode. But I didn't want to do that just because it's hard work and it's summer and I don't know, whatever. Sorry, JS. But it nonetheless, I wanted to look for something that I could read even. And I came up with a big ass book called The Epic of America by James Truslow Adams. And it was published in 1931. And he was a historian. And he's the guy who came up with the meme, The American Dream. And
oh, nice. I just learned something.
And which is an American meme.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. Anyway, so he is the one who came up with this idea. The meme, not the idea as much, right? The idea really does kind of go back to the forefathers, the gentleman who came up with the Declaration of Independence. And from that, I guess his whole attempt was to try and get at what is the American dream? It's sort of go all the way back to the forefathers and then take it up to, at the time was 1931, and try and just sort of flesh out, what do we mean by that? The idea that, this idea that he calls the American dream in his book, The Epic of America. And it's quite extensive. It's a long, big 400 plus page book. It just goes and goes and goes. And he kind of, I guess, from what I can tell from reading a little bit and also looking at what other people have to say about the book, it's kind of a departure because typically, his writing or whatever would have been pretty stuffy and, boring and whatever, very academic. And in this case, he's got a little more passion, a little more zest in the writing of it. And he's kind of going off and having a good old time because obviously it's a topic he really found interesting. And then I also found an essay in Vanity Fair from March 5th, 2009, called Rethinking the American Dream by David Camp. And so that's something where people could probably go if they wanted to read it. You know, another take or just an article on the idea of the American Dream. again, that's David Camp. And this guy, David Camp, who I looked him up, and he's not like a historian of America, you know, American historian or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't study American history. I don't even remember what all the things he does, but they're not really related. And it's interesting that he took on this topic suddenly, because it seems like it is also a departure for him, just, you know, in terms of like just topic area. But I thought it was a really good piece. And trying to think of where to go from here.
Did you read the big long book or part of it?
I read some of it, but it just kind of...
What's that? Do you know that guy's thesis statement? In its original form, what was the statement of the American Dream?
I have it. Okay. Well, he states it a number of different times, apparently, throughout it. But the last one is this. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
The American dream is that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, with opportunity for each according to ability or achievement. It is a difficult dream for the European upper classes to interpret adequately, and too many of us ourselves have grown weary and mistrustful of it. It is not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable, and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position.
Okay, that's a good selection. It seems to state a story, a narrative, as to what this American dream is. And it sounds to me basically like a definition or description of what they call meritocracy.
Yeah, right? I would say absolutely. It's very much a meritocracy.
And
yes.
A meritocracy.
I know, I was like, an Americanocracy. Yeah.
And it has an interesting parallel to one of the sources that I was going to talk about later, so I'll briefly say it now. I was going to say, as listeners may expect out of me by now, that my take on the American Dream is very cynical, and I did some reading of Plato's Republic because I wanted to talk about the noble lie concept. Also, in Book 3 of the Republic, where he brings up noble lie, he talks about the... I don't know if they literally call it this, but the metallic theory or something of humans, that there's different metals, that some people are gold and some are bronze and some are silver or whatever. Yeah. And just the idea that there's inborn characteristics in human beings that make you one or another caste, that there's certain things. And that sounds like that Truslow had some of that in there, that everyone... according to their birth or whatever, according to their innate abilities. Is allowed to maximize along some dimensions.
He doesn't seem to suggest, however, that... he seems to suggest to me that, or he doesn't deny it, that there isn't a bit of a shuffling of the deck. But... where it sounds like he does kind of draw the line is, you know, with black people. Like, he talks about how, you know, over time he thought that the, you know, ethnic minorities would soon be absorbed in the American culture, you know, but that he didn't think black people ever could. And I'm imagining that there is a bit of an innate born, you know, component there that he thinks black people are incapable of doing that. This article that the guy writes, that seems to be a common occurrence throughout much of it. There's this guy by the name of, I think it was Bill Levitt. And coming back from World War II, he had acquired some skills for building in the army. And he came up with this idea for creating a planned neighborhood, you know, and all the houses would be more or less the same footprint, you know, blueprint or whatever, floor plan. And, you know, just have, you know, their roads and a certain amount of lawn and a certain amount of space to park a car or whatever it is. And it was on, I think, on Long Island, and he created Levittown, which is the first kind of like sort of quick manufactured neighborhood of its time. You can kind of see it in pop culture, like they kind of lean on that in Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, where the Bailey's Building and Loan has, like, you know, they let the Italian grocer type guy, Martini or whoever it was, you know, get a house, and, you know, puts his, you know, big ass Catholic family in the house, and hey, we got a house, you know, that kind of thing. But you know, and in particular, Bill Levitt had in mind that soldiers coming back from the war would populate these homes, and it would be a nice, easy transition back into society after a long war. But he didn't think that black people could, you know, he wasn't going to let black people live in the Levittown or whatever. So that seems to also reoccur, you know.
Are you saying in America's past there is a well-established history of records of systematic racism?
It's the original sin.
Yeah.
Bitches. But that seems to come back again a lot. And if we're talking about Plato's Republic, let's say, you know, in some societies, it may not be skin color, right? Because there's been a debate about Achilles as to whether or not he was blonde or he was black. And the idea, or just darker skin color, because the word that they use kind of can be applied in both ways or whatever, you know, so there's that type of thing. So hold on. My son heard the word Achilles and now he's come over because ancient Greek history is his thing. It's his jam.
Most of the people that were Greek had tan skin and black hair.
There you go. That was my son, everybody. Anyway,
I thought they just all look like bright white marble.
Yeah, especially the pure philosophers, right? Like Plato. Play-Doh made of marble, or maybe just clay.
Okay. Do you have more to say about the 1930s guy, or just kind of that statement was a good one of what?
That was just
the American dream first sounded like.
Yeah. That's his sort of formulation. But, you know, of course, he went through all of the Founding Fathers stuff. And, you know, the Declaration of Independence is way more intricate in detail about what equalities are. And in particular, you know, trying to talk about how not only did people in the United States and the colonies want freedom from you know, the British or whatever, or European ruling classes, like their, you know, better off, well-to-do American colonial neighbors. But they also wanted freedom from being told what to do by their neighbors, who are these colonial, well-to-do people, you know. And so that was sort of on people's minds even then as well. And that's sort of the idea that the American dream sort of springs from, is that it's like it's everybody. And there's a lot of, like, anecdotes about how, you know, even his, like, he had, you know, friends who were from other countries, or he had a guy who worked for him. And the idea of a caste seemed very strong to them, that they didn't have to bear the burden of in the United States. They could look you in the eye. It didn't matter what your station in life was. Or he had this one guy who we got into the habit of talking to on a regular basis, that, like, after work, who was just a guy who worked for him, but it was really casual chit-chat. The guy had remarked that, like, there's no way where I come from that I would be able to talk to you like man to man. I'd have to talk to you as you're my employer, like, you know, that kind of thing. So there's some, that's a, like a, like a difference between other places in the American dream land that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nightmare, Harlan says.
Do you want to move to the article length one? And is there comments on that?
Well, the article length one primarily kind of plotted along, looking at kind of the various changes that have occurred throughout, you know, the 20th century in particular. And it was looking at how, like one of the things that the guy pointed out, which I thought was interesting, was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Well, okay, first of all, now I'll go back. I won't talk about him yet. But like back with like Woodrow Wilson, like he was one of the first presidents to give a speech to, you know, the voting masses or whatever, who, you know, were essentially every state was now a state or whatever. There was no such thing as frontier anymore. So the idea of the American dream changes over time because of all the various dynamics at play, whether that be, you know, war and land acquisition and forcing Native Americans to do, you know, to live in squalor or whatever, someplace in a small area or whatever, Trail of Tears, et cetera, acquiring, you know, land from the Spanish or the British or the French or whatever it is as they go all the way across in that manifest destiny. The idea of the American dream to somebody when it was all open frontier kind of may have seemed a little different in terms of what the task was at hand to achieve the American dream. Whereas, you know, over time it would start to change because now, you know, okay, every state is filled out now and the, you know, the land is all used up and there's not any new place you can just throw a, you know, rock and say, that's my land, you know, or whatever. So, he then kind of goes on to talk about, you know, with the Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he did the New Deal, but also how there was, you know, he gave the speech about the four freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And Norman Rockwell picked that up, and he created those four paintings that are sort of, maybe you've seen them before. I've seen them certainly, and I think they were very popular at the time. And they, you know, I think they were on the cover of, is it Time or whatever, art, you know, maybe Life or Time, one of those magazines back in the day that, you know, isn't as common today. But and the, you know, in particular, the this guy who wrote the article talked about how the American dream had changed. Now it's like, if you look at the painting for Freedom from Want, it's this kind of older couple and there's this big turkey that they've cooked and everybody's sort of gathered around the table. But if you really look closely, it's just a few celery stalks on a plate, on a bowl of fruit, some plain white curtains. Like the American dream suddenly was quite modest compared to boom and bust, like got a gold rush and yeah, you know, kill all the passenger pigeons, kill all the bison, kill, you know, like get me more, you know, like that kind of thing. And he was talking about how a lot of the times people who are really successful from like Germany or wherever could come to the United States back in the old days and really get a, you know, good hold on, you know, monopolizing something. And you know, they could have their American dream, but other people were going to suffer, you know, quite a bit. So anyway, there's this idea of the social order being, you know, that's the other part of, you know, the Adams quote is the social order is not just that, you know, you have your place and you stay to it or whatever, but as much as the idea that you can have a better life. And better from what? Well, better from your parents or better from where you're coming from in another country or whatever. It can be better here. And that, you know, anyway, so then it changes from there and it starts to go downhill where modesty gets outpaced by excessive, you know, wants and stuff like that. Like the guy says, it was freedom from want, not freedom to want, you know, and, you know, little things like that, you know, where it starts talking about people who have lost the thriftiness of their Depression era ancestors. And he's quoting from other authors and stuff like that. But lost that thrift and also lost their public sector priorities and are now just kind of like, you know, it's being reflected in our pop culture. The idea of the teenager comes into light, which is this sort of, you know, the affluent society's sort of ascendant, you know, demographic, you know, suddenly they're not working. They're sitting there looking cool, playing their guitar. Like all of a sudden there's all this aspiration in different ways than it had been before. And there's just this continual grind towards, I mean, we're the Dawdler's philosophy, but a continual grind towards hustling, you know, and in a way dawdling is sort of that, to me, that nice middle ground. Hustle is where now, over time, people start to lose that sense of like, oh, I'll never be able to achieve the American dream. Like, you know, that percentage of people who the optimism about that got less and less and less over time as people started taking out loans and going into debt, going from, the United States being a huge, creditor nation to becoming a huge debtor nation. All that kind of stuff is kind of what this article goes after. And but anyway, so the American dream changes. I don't know if the American dream, is it this just excessive thing, you know, where you go from like the penthouse to the streets and vice versa. You know, it's that sort of, possibility hangs on a thread. Whereas before it was a pretty sturdy rope. Possibility was something you could really pull yourself up from your bootstraps and you could do it, you know, because you can look people in the eye in this country. And, you know, that's probably the more early to mid 20th century view of things. Now it's like, you know, kiss someone's ass to get ahead or whatever, or fall in line to not get knocked down. You know, all this upward mobility is now everyone worries about downward mobility and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, anyway, so standard of living going from modest to excessive. In terms of your view on it, and then also just the idea that there's a mutable station in life, like you can, that it, things change, you know, that it, you aren't in a cast, you know. I think that's the idea of the American dream too, is that standard of living can be better, and there's nothing to stop you from possibly moving to another place in your society in terms of level or whatever.
Yeah, they're accessible to anyone.
Rags to riches.
And then you could potentially put in brackets, a lot of people include the phrase, who works hard, on bracket, you know.
Yeah, that's in there. People say that, for sure. Mm-hmm. But some people don't.
Which I think is kind of funny, because that's, to me, a nightmare. Like, what kind of dream is it where they're like, well, if you work your ass off, then you can have a picket fence?
Well,
like us, if we're dreaming here, let's dream a little better.
Well, that's true. I think one of the things that people might be missing from that type of line of thought is the idea that, if you love what you do in your pursuit of the American dream, then it won't feel very hard. It'll be a lot of effort and it'll be a lot of love and sweat and all that. But
that's something, I mean, well, here, let me, I'll give you what I think of when I think of American dream. And then you tell me how it relates to that, because I don't think any of the versions have that you love what you do in them. I hear the phrase and I go to the Constitution or what, the early days, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness crap.
Yeah.
And then I jump to the 50s, 60s, Leave It to Beaver style, clean cut work at the factory and come home and have your modest Thanksgiving dinner with celery version.
Right.
The white picket fence thing with the 2.5 kids and a dog and a jab and maybe some booze. And then there's the new one, which I would say is be Mark Zuckerberg. So I think that in like the 50s version, you wanted to be, you know, a worker at General Motors or something. Have a decent and stable job and your comfortable but modest life in the burbs or wherever they liked to be. But then you have this new version where it's I want to strike it big, and I can be the next Elon Musk. That's, you know, those are at least two different ways you could think about the dream.
Okay.
Right. What? Right.
Yeah. The only modification I would quickly make on it is that I don't think B. Mark Zuckerberg is a new dream, because I think before it was B. Mark Zuckerberg, then it was in the late 1800s or whatever, it was B. the person who strikes it rich at the gold. You know, it was. Well,
okay.
You know
maybe
what I mean?
There might have been that version. And I'm just thinking. And this could totally be ignorant, but when I think of old-timey American dreams, I don't attribute to them B. Henry Ford, but rather work on the assembly line.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
I don't know if they were dreaming about being the top guy.
Well, not necessarily, but that's partly because their life was a nightmare. And so the dream was less because there was so much There was so much despair compared to, you know, through the Gilded Age in the early 1900s, there was a lot of struggle and strife. And at the same time, there were all these new innovations going on and industrialization and whatnot. And so for a lot of people, they wanted those jobs because those jobs meant they could be, you know, they could prosper in a way that they can't in wherever they are, trying to make it in a field somewhere or whatever. And so I think that sort of stability was what people wanted when they're down and out. However, when they come to this country, I think there is that sense of like, oh, I could, you know, especially back when there was a frontier, they could go and stake a claim and maybe make it, you know, strike it rich or whatever. And maybe it wasn't social media platforms, but it was sort of more like, you know, the, you know, have a large cattle ranching operation or something. And, you know, yeah, I had to kill a whole bunch of people to get there, but I did it. You know, it was a lot of hard work killing or, you know, I mean, because that's the other thing that the stories are filled with is the battles in the United States in the West between the sheep herders and the cattle people, you know, and all the raids that would happen and, you know, the Wild West and. Anyway, so I do think there's this sense, though, the excessive way of thinking about things is like the mega bucks. You start scratching a ticket and you're like, fucking, I need $1 million, you know, like or more, you know, and like, look at those big billboards for the big, you know, billions of dollars. It's like, but it's like maybe one ticket will get that, you know, or one Powerball number arrangement or whatever. But sometimes nothing happens, right? I mean, sometimes the big kahuna, big thing never gets used or I mean, never gets called. And so
you've proven how unoriginal one of my points is, because that's what I was going to say as my critique of what I was calling this neo-style dream, where you want to be Zuckerberg level.
Mm-hmm.
That's... We make fun of people who play the lottery and call it the idiot tax or the poor tax or whatever. You know, everybody knows you're not going to win it, but they waste their money doing that.
Yeah.
And the odds of you being in the 0.001% or what, you know, that you make it to the top, that you be Zuckerberg, are way less than winning the lottery. And I think that's...
Oh, yeah.
A ridiculous dream.
The reason
I don't like the old style one is that to me sounds like a perfect case of you are free to do as we tell you.
Yeah.
You have all of these options that we have pre-selected and given to you.
Yeah, well, for
and
sure.
That it's just, you know, that I don't see how, I don't buy it anyway. I didn't live, maybe at that time, I would have, hopefully not, but that doesn't sound very dreamy.
It's not libertarian, that's for sure, right? It's not the I do what I want when I want, you know, kind of thing. It's definitely the more social contracty style, right? Where everybody kind of, you know, worries about the public, say, oh, you know, what about our libraries? And what, you know, like, and a lot of that stuff, luckily, was grassroots, right? There was a lot of grassroots movements made by people who are sick and tired and fed up and all that kind of stuff. And of course, grassroots roots movements can become, co-opted by people with, you know, ulterior motivations and stuff. And yeah, people continue to be controlled. But the big one, though, was that, you know, the big control thing was the forgetting potentially of all the hard work that went into getting someone at that Leave It to Beaver place and start to say, well, you know, what if you could, you know, what if we raised your credit limit, you know, and people without even realizing, you know, just being all of a sudden it's been raised, you know, all of a sudden this sort of, it's like a money revolution, you know, or whatever it is they called it. And now everybody gets to kind of take, you know, maybe three trips a year rather than like the one or whatever. And usually the one was like camping and whatnot. But there is something to the more modest life where people's expectations are not so like volatile or whatever, you know, where it's like, you know, if I don't get this scratch ticket, I'm ruined, you know, or like the gambler who's like, just give me one more day, I'll get the money, you know, and then it's this big deal to like get the money and like everything's up against the wall and before you know it, you're frozen in carbonite. But like, I don't know, it's that sort of, that to me, that roller coaster, I'd rather be more in that Leave It to Beaver spot than in the strike it rich or I die, because that's so more, so much more animalistic, it seems like to me, where you're just like, you know, just frothing at the mouth and just, you know, like you're always on the hunt. You're like a, you know, like a predator who's just constantly hungry and just out there just like, can I eat that? Can I eat that? Can I eat that? Oh God, I'm trying to get it. You know, I'm so hungry and I'm losing energy and all that kind of shit. That's sort of, I don't like that. That's scary to me. The sort of just right. Nuts.
Yes. But I'm saying, like, if what we're talking about here, if the realm that we're dealing with is the dream, the beautiful story, the that which we aspire to, you know, I would so much rather go for a Gene Roddenberry dream or a Kropotkin dream or an Amida Buddha dream or a Terence McKenna archaic revival dream or what, like there's all these different futures to which we can aspire that aren't, boy, I really hope I can be a slave to a boss that gives me dental.
No, and I would say that that would come in steps though, right? I mean, it's like you can't go from like, well, I'm not saying you can't, but likely it'd be difficult to go from, you know, a caste system type society to Gene Roddenberry's universe. Like, you know, likely there's going to be steps along the way. And one of the things I wanted to say was that,
but we ain't planning, we dreaming, man.
One of the things I would say about the American dream and just the idea that America is so great and blah, 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 is the idea of hope. Even those people who are like frothing at the mouth, wanting to be the next Zuckerberg or whatever it is, they're like hopeful that that will happen. And there are plenty of places that are people from other places that I've met, and they don't even come close to having anything like that in terms of hope. I once worked on a ship with a whole bunch of people from South Africa, and I couldn't, like, they would say, like, oh, yeah, well, everything's terrible, and, you know, we live in these gated communities, and we fear for our lives when we go outside of them and all this kind of stuff. And I'd ask, I'd be like, well, what about this or what about that? No, no. What about this? No. I was like that hopeful American. I could be the next Mark Zuckerberg. And they were just like, no, there's no way out. There's no. We're just destined to live these miserable lives.
You know? Oh, man, I need to be on this boat. These are my people.
And like, yeah. And so I just remember, like, that's the difference. And I think it would be harder to get to Gene Roddenberry if you're like, no, it'll never work. You know, then if you were like,
perhaps a future episode could be hope. I'm less than immediately convinced that hope is a good thing. That's when it sounds more like one of those deals that needs a kind of Zizek style Hegelian reversal or Alan Watts virtue destruction rant or something. My favorite, before we go, before this gets too long.
Oh, shit.
I can't not mention that there's only one tirade about the American dream that needs to be heard by anyone, and it's from George Carlin's HBO special, Life is Worth Losing. Yes. It's about 5 minutes of that he's got on American Dream. It's the greatest thing ever, and I can't sign off on it enough times. That's what I would add to that, the whole noble lie style, ignoble lie thing, that in this perspective, what's going on around here is that there are owners behind the scenes that you will never see or know about that are in charge of everything, and they use these rhetorical tricks as tools of levers of power and control, and that American Dream is one of these. And as long as people buy into it and are happy to do what they're told, accept their choices and options as given by the people who are going to benefit from their subservience to the system. And I don't know. That's the primary thing I think about when I hear American Dream, that it's just a rhetorical trick to control people and make them feel happy and content with a shitty situation.
Well, that would be a big change from possibly other societies, right? Where they're like, in the past, they'd be like, just do it. You know, I'll break your son's arms, you know? And here we're like, do it. You may win the lottery. You know?
But at least that's honest. You know, like I just brought up the Zizek thing. He has that little meme thinking tool that he uses when he talks about the modern permissive parents who say they want the kid to go visit grandma. And they're like, well, you know, Johnny, grandma really loves you. And she did so much for you when you were young. And you tries to make them feel as though they have this debt and they owe it. And they, you know, versus the old style strict parent that just says, you know, put your shoes on. We're going to see grandma. That's it. Because I said so. And that at least the latter is honest. And it can be resisted. You can either choose to capitulate and say, okay, well, he wants me to do this. I guess I'm going to go. Or I refuse and I'm not going to go. Versus this kind of psychological manipulation that tries to get inside your head and implant some kind of artificial but internal desire to do the thing. I find that in some ways more sinister and dangerous and worse. And the American dream sounds kind of like this. Well, you know, grandma really loves you.
Yeah. I think that it can be very sinister and can be used in a negative, bad way. But I do think that, you know, I am kind of for artificial simulations, you know. I think that I don't know if I completely buy 100% that some, you know, Illuminati of type, some type is controlling things. I think it's more likely that the real state of affairs is that no one's really controlling things, and that's the problem. Is that we don't have enough artificial stuff in our society, that we don't have enough, you know, we're not doing anything to determine the behavior of the system. And so anybody who wants to take advantage of any wave or whatever that's happening can, and it can be usually at the expense of other people in the process. But that there's some forethought or planning that goes into it ahead of time. I think it's all just like chaotic, and you just bring with you your motivations. And if they're antisocial, they're antisocial. And if you have to step on somebody to get there, you will, you know? And I kind of think that's more That's not what we want. And I think that things like these memes, like, we're not going to let the memes control us, but we're going to control the memes or something, that there's, that we have some more artificial sense for what to do about our lives. That gets us, I think, possibly just as easily to Gene Roddenberry than it does also get us to, you know, being in the Matrix or whatever.
And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the honors count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.